There are 90 members of the state legislature from all corners of the state. But how well do they and their counterparts across the country represent their constituents?
This is a country that's becoming increasingly diverse, and yet the legislatures are not really reflecting those changes.
I'm Mark Brody. Also today on the show, the U.S. Supreme Court hears arguments about Arizona's redistricting process again, why court backlogs are leaving some children and families in limbo, and this.
Most people say, oh, so you can do the Sound of Music, and I think, that's really not yodeling, because, yeah, they hit the right notes. If I were yodeling, it's, you know.
Uh-huh. Plus, checking for originality and the rush of going fast. That and more on the show after a check of this hour's news. Good afternoon. It's the show on KJZZ. I'm Mark Brody in Phoenix. Checking Valley traffic at this hour. I-17 southbound, the exit ramp at 7th Avenue is blocked. Elsewhere, I-10 eastbound, a crash at Bullard Avenue has three lanes blocked. That's in the West Valley. And on the 101 northbound in the East Valley, a crash blocks the on-ramp at McDonald. Look for partly sunny skies for the rest of the afternoon today with a high of 77. Clear tonight, overnight lows in the upper 40s. It's sunny and 70 degrees at KJZZ. A young peregrine falcon that was found with a broken wing in downtown Phoenix was released back into the wild today. The falcon was rehabbed for the past few months by a master falconer in Buckeye to learn how to hunt on the wing. Arizona Game and Fish falconer Jerry Ostwinkle says the dairy farm the department decided to release her at is the perfect environment for a young falcon. Once released, the falcon immediately flew and caught a bird and chased after a large flock of pigeons in the field. The peregrine falcon was taken off the endangered species list in 1999. The unit at a Kingman prison where riots broke out in July will no longer hold general population prisoners. KJZZ's Catherine Fritke has more on the change.
The Wallapai unit at the privately owned state prison in Kingman suffered extensive damage after a riot took place there earlier this year. The Kingman Daily Miner reports when the unit reopens next month, it will solely house sex offenders. Following the riots, the Arizona Department of Corrections was forced to close the unit and move more than 1,100 inmates to other facilities. At the time, the prison was run by Management and Training Corporation. Geo Group became the prison operator earlier this month. Catherine Fricke, KJZZ News.
Arizona's process for drawing its political boundaries was back before the U.S. Supreme Court this morning. The justices heard arguments on whether the state's Independent Redistricting Commission illegally distributed Arizona's population when creating the state's 30 legislative districts. Earlier this year, the High Court upheld the process of using the IRC to draw congressional maps. Howie Fisher of Capital Media Services is in Washington, D.C. for the arguments and joins me. So, Howie, what did the justices hear about this morning?
Well, this was a vastly different case than the congressional case, which had to do with whether the commission could draw congressional lines, which the court concluded it could. There is no question but that the commission can draw legislative lines. The question becomes how much they can deviate from the standard ideal population. You supposedly should take the state's population, you divide it by 30, you come up with the size of each of the 30 districts. There is about an 8.8% difference between the largest and smallest districts. Now, the commission argued, well, we did that to comply with the Voting Rights Act, so we didn't dilute minority voting strength. Now, all of that being facts, the question is it illegal? And I think that's the part that the challengers are having a hard time selling the court. The justices asked a lot of questions of Mark Hearn, who is the attorney for the challengers, and I think that they weren't particularly satisfied with his answers.
Did the court seem okay with the population differences between districts, whether it is because of the Voting Rights Act or any other factors?
Well, this is a closer call. In prior court cases, the justices have said anything under a 10% deviation is what they call a de minimis violation. Essentially, they're saying that if it's 10% or less, we're not going to assume that there is gerrymandering or any violation occurring. Now, Mark Hearn, who represents the challengers, acknowledged this is less than 10%, but he said that doesn't mean that it's okay. All it means is that he has the burden to prove that there was an invalid purpose in creating the population differences. And so we get into these questions here of what is a valid purpose? I mean, for example, the voters, when they created the commission, said you have to comply with the Voting Rights Act. You have to have communities of interest. You have to try to respect political boundaries. Well, what if you decided that you were going to move a boundary between Maricopa and Pinal County to do that, but you ended up changing the population? Does that make a federal case out of it? And that's where I think he's going to have some trouble, because I don't think the justices want to be micromanaging this.
One of the other arguments that challengers have made is that the commission drew these boundaries to basically give Democrats an advantage in the state legislature. Clearly, that didn't really work that well, if in fact that was their point, because Republicans still dominate both the state House and Senate. Did that issue come up at all before the justices today?
Well, it definitely did. And it's not just a question that Republicans still dominate, but one of the justices pointed out that the percentage of Republicans in the House and Senate actually exceeds the percentage of Republicans who exist in terms of voter registration. Now, one of the other justices, Justice Alito, said, well, that's a red herring as to whether, in fact, they were successful at it. But you still got to look at the question of what is the primary purpose of the population differences. As I say, I think it's the justices were very skeptical about how far in they wanted to weigh on this one, because, you know, they've got other important redistricting cases. The other one they heard this morning was this case out of Texas. Do you use total population? Do you use voting age population? Do you include citizens? And I think that one has got much more far-reaching implications rather than getting deep in the weeds in an Arizona case.
Howie Fisher is Capital Media Services. He joined me from Washington, D.C., where he attended this morning's Supreme Court hearing over Arizona's Independent Redistricting Commission's legislative boundaries. Howie, thanks as always.
Glad to be here.
Juvenile courts are overwhelmed with the number of cases on their dockets. Maricopa County courts report the number of kids involved in dependency and severance proceedings has doubled in the past 5 years. Starting in January, more judges will start taking these cases to help speed up the process. As KJZZ's Alexandra Olgan reports, in the meantime, many children and families are hanging in the balance.
At the juvenile court building in West Phoenix, parents, attorneys, and caseworkers are sitting anxiously outside the facility's courtrooms. Each family will spend about 20 minutes in front of the judge. In these chambers, judges decide whether to separate or keep families together. Attorney Christina Phyllis represents parents in these cases. She says the way DCS is treating families has changed, and not in a good way.
We stopped viewing the family as something sacred and something we needed to protect, as to something that is disposable and interchangeable. We have a child, we'll just give it new parents and the child will be happy. It doesn't work that way.
She says the number of children with open court cases has continued to increase. According to the Attorney General's office, more than 21,000 kids in Arizona are involved in these court proceedings. And data from the state's Department of Child Safety shows more than 80% of those kids are living in foster or group homes with extended family or in shelters.
The cases are staying open longer. Services are not being put in place for parents in a timely manner.
According to Arizona Attorney General data, more than 6,000 cases have been open for more than a year, a timeline Veronica Van is well past. Van likes to draw. She sketches on a thick pad of white paper. It's how she fills her free time while at a residential treatment center in Levine. She says it's her way of coping.
It's a positive outlet, you know, when I think about my kids.
DCS confirms it first had contact with her in May of last year, but can't comment on specifics for privacy reasons. Her case is still open 19 months later. Van says she spent almost a fifth of that time waiting for court-ordered drug treatment. Eventually, she took matters into her own hands, a move she believes may have saved her parental rights to her three kids. And at the last hearing, the judge told her,
"Had you not took the steps you did, checking yourself into treatment, he's like, I would have severed your rights."
She's now more than 2 months into her drug treatment for meth addiction and on the path to getting her kids back. But Van faced more than just a long wait for services. Since her case opened, she's had 9 DCS caseworkers. Agency officials face several challenges when tackling the issue of long wait times, one of which is turnover. The agency reports it lost about 40% of its caseworkers in the last fiscal year, a trend DCS spokesman Doug Nick hopes won't continue.
We are working with HR to better identify candidates for caseworker positions.
the Department of Child Safety is also working with service providers it contracts with, who Nick claims have hired more people. He says the waitlist has been decreasing in the recent months partly due to that, but he couldn't specify how long families are waiting for court-mandated services.
We're implementing a strategy that is designed to eliminate the wait list within about 6 months or so. So that is our hope, and that's what we've outlined in our objectives.
Part of that strategy is getting families preventive services. But regardless of the improvements DCS says it's making, attorney Christina Phyllis hasn't seen her cases move any faster. She says the courts constantly have to extend deadlines.
We're just pushing it off for another 60 days when we can come back and hopefully we have more information. When we could be moving towards having the children go home, none of that's happening because no one has the information or the services weren't put in place.
And for now, that's what the numbers show. The Attorney General's office reports more than 3,100 cases have been open longer than 2 years. Alexandra Olgan, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
Still to come, how some students are trying to stay ahead of technology when it comes to cheating.
Students are increasingly learning to kind of do a plagiarism check in the same way that you do a spell check, and then alter enough of their text to avoid detection.
How do colleges and universities respond? That's ahead. It's the show. Good Tuesday afternoon to you. It's the show on KJZZ. I'm Mark Brody in Phoenix, along with my friend and colleague Steve Goldstein. This is also the KJZZ End of the Year Member Drive. We hope you'll take just a couple of minutes on this Tuesday afternoon and make your gift of support in support of KJZZ, of KJZZ's original productions, everything you hear on this station. Three really easy ways to do it, kjzz.org, on the KJZZ mobile app, or call 888-774-9150.
Mark, a very exciting possibility here. Folks, call in at 888-774-9150. You know, they say an apple a day keeps the doctor away.
I've heard that.
I don't think an iPad Pro or Apple Pencil keeps anybody away. It draws people in.
Yes.
So people will have a chance to win this if you get in before 6 o'clock tonight. It's light, thin, larger than other iPads, has the biggest display yet with high resolution. There's also this Apple Pencil. I don't even know how to explain that, but it sounds pretty cool.
It does sound pretty cool, and you can win it. Somebody's going to win this thing tonight.
Absolutely.
Might as well be you.
888-774-9150 or kjzz.org.
You know what else I bet you could do it on an iPad Pro?
Give money to KJZZ?
Besides that, you could listen to the show. You could listen to KJZZ. You can podcast KJZZ. There are so many good reasons to give to your public radio station, not the least of which is that we rely on you. It's the public radio business model. We don't have commercials here. We have you. We have listeners. And that's why we come to you during these short member drives to ask you to give support at whatever dollar amount fits your budget. Is it $5 a month? Great. Is it $10 or $15 a month? Great. Something else? Terrific. The important thing is that you step up and be counted right now during this short year-end member drive. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150.
And though whatever way you choose to give is outstanding, if you become a sustaining member, that's even more important in some ways, helping KJZZ have a predictable source of income going into the future. Sustaining members are listeners who become members and give automatically monthly tax-deductible contributions. So give the monthly gift that fits your budget right now. That might be $10 a month. It could be $20 a month. It might be more. It might be less. You decide on that. Feel and give while it feels good. So call 888-774-9150 or kjzz.org to support this important community resource here in the Valley.
It'll only take a couple of minutes to make your gift of support, but that is so vital to this radio station. As I said, we rely on you for the largest and most reliable source of support for KJZZ. That's why we come to you during these drives. And when you invest in KJZZ, you get immediate returns. You don't have to wait for it. You don't have to wait for anything to mature. You turn on the radio the next time, it's there. You can hear what you have invested in. You learn something new. You get a different perspective. You connect with the world. You can feel good about listening and join our proud supporters who help keep KJZZ on the air. If you haven't yet made a contribution or would like to increase your gift, go to kjzz.org or call 888-774-9150.
And in addition to what you've come to rely on from NPR for all these years and KJZZ, we're doing more original productions. The show, obviously, a great example of that, where you get local stories, analysis, exploration of the Valley, and the unique people and places that make it so interesting, and it really enriches your life as well. Again, this sort of radio isn't just background noise. It's stuff that's going on in your backyard. You can really relate to it. There is that togetherness, that community aspect of it. And we hope you'll call in right now to support it. It'll just take a couple of minutes of your time. Make that year-end tax-deductible donation at 888-774-9150.
Yeah, and this service is so unique in the Phoenix area. If you try to find something like the show or, frankly, like KJZZ anywhere else, you're just not going to find it. You're not going to find in-depth reporting about what's going on here in the valley, around Metro Phoenix, around the state, or even really around the country, around the world, other than here on KJZZ. It happens because of your generous financial support. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150.
It'll just take a couple of minutes. You will not miss any of the valuable stuff you want to hear on the show. The number is 888-774-9150. When you call that number, you have the opportunity to win an iPad Pro and Apple Pencil. Again, the number is 888-774-9150. You can also give your gift online at KJZZ.org. And thanks.
KJZZ is supported by Basis Schools, now accepting applications for the 2016-2017 school year, offering a liberal arts education with a STEM focus. More information on Basis Schools is at enrollbasisaz.com.
How representative are our state representatives? It's a question Stateline is asking in a series of reports being released this week, looking at areas including race and gender, education and occupation, and how well state lawmakers reflect their constituents. Scott Greenberger is the executive editor of Stateline, which is affiliated with the Pew Charitable Trust and reports on state policy. So, Scott, how representative are state legislators?
Well, not very representative, or not representative enough, I guess I should say. For example, when you look at gender, about 50%, or actually a little more, of the population in the United States is female, but only between 24 and 25% of the people serving in state legislatures are women. And that number hasn't really moved for about a decade or more. So, Also, in terms of minority representation, the percentage of minority legislators lags behind the percentage of minorities in the overall population in almost all cases, and Arizona is no exception to that.
As far as the gender, Arizona has had a pretty good tradition of having a fairly high number of female legislators. Did you find that in this report as well?
We did, actually. Arizona did quite well. It was near the, if you consider gender balance something that we should strive for. Arizona, 36% of the legislators in Arizona are women. Only a few states had a higher percentage.
You also looked at the education of legislators in relation to the education level of the residents of the states. How did Arizona do in that regard?
Well, in Arizona, this was fairly typical. People that we elect to state legislatures tend to have attained a much higher level of education than the population at large. One interesting thing that we found with regard to occupation is that the percentage of lawyers serving in state legislatures has declined pretty significantly over the past several decades. And in 1976, about 22% of state legislators nationwide were lawyers, and in 2015 that was down to 14%. And then in Arizona, the numbers are even lower, actually.
What are the implications, I guess both good and bad, of having state legislators that are not necessarily reflective of the people that they're serving?
Well, I mean, certainly there's no reason why a legislator who's a man can't legislate on issues affecting women or vice versa, but I think most people would acknowledge that a person's experiences, their background, whether it's gender or race and ethnicity or education or occupation, helps to inform their views of the world and the issues that they're most interested in. And therefore, it probably makes some sense for democratic reasons, little d democratic, to elect people who at least somewhat mirror the population as a whole, so we can be sure that as Americans, as average citizens, that our views and our concerns are being addressed in state capitals.
Have you found that state legislatures are becoming more representative of the states themselves, or are things basically where they've been?
Well, there definitely has been progress on that front over time, but what we found is that, and I mentioned this earlier, but it was reference to women, that the progress seems to have stalled over the last 10 years or so. And of course, with regard to race and ethnicity, this is a country that's becoming increasingly diverse, and yet the legislatures are not really reflecting those changes.
As far as accelerating the pace of change, how much of that comes down, do you think, to more active and perhaps better recruitment of candidates?
That's a big part of it, and we in the articles that we are publishing this week, that's a factor in when it comes to both gender and race and ethnicity. It is the case that we found this in particular with regard to women, that they're less likely to just decide on their own to run for the legislature when compared to men. They need to be recruited, and very often it takes time to give them the comfort level and the confidence to go ahead and enter politics.
Scott Greenberger is executive editor of Stateline. Scott, thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Imagine going more than 200 miles an hour, and you're not on a plane or a train or an automobile. Valley resident Valerie Thompson has reached those speeds on a BMW motorcycle and is a 5-time land speed record holder. She is so comfortable at that extreme of velocity that she's picked up the nickname America's Queen of Speed. And Valerie, thanks for slowing down enough to join me.
I'm always fast.
Yeah.
In everything I do, everything's a race. It doesn't matter to get the doorbell, to get to open up a door.
Yeah.
I mean, anything that I do is, I'm in race mode.
And Queen of Speed's a cool nickname. Do you like it?
I like it, yeah.
Okay. Okay, as a woman, are there unique challenges, or were you able to earn people's respect pretty quickly?
There's a long road to earn respect. I mean, in anything and everything you do, I mean, the word respect is very highly put up on a pedestal. It's like the queen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I've done my time, and now it's time to showcase.
Describe what you're riding on and how it's different from what people might see on the freeway.
Well, what I race on is at the Bonneville Salt Flats. It's a surface that is amazingly nothing but salt, and it goes for miles and miles and hundreds of miles. So it's just in a very unique place. It takes a very unique person to race on a very unique surface.
Right.
You know, there's just no place in the world that is like it.
You're going over 200 miles an hour?
208, please.
208 miles.
208.
208
yes.
Miles an hour on salt flats. How did you get to a point where not only were you confident handling this, but how do you train to not only go 208 miles an hour, but 208 miles on that kind of surface?
Well, it's all about listening to the machine, listening to, you know, feeling the wind. It's all about listening. It's just the machine in you, and there's nobody else. It's nobody can text you, nobody can call you, nobody can, like, oh, right turn, please. Okay, thank you, Siri. There's nobody that can do that. It's all about you and, you know, what you're feeling when you're out there is one with the element. And another goal in mind is just to go as fast as you can. So
how did you get to the point where you were so confident in doing this? And knowing, because it's one thing to have the attitude, but you have the attitude and the skill.
You can say, hey, I'm going to do this today, but you know, you can also put it on your bucket list for, hey, my goal was to go 200 miles per hour, and I've conquered that. And now, you know, I set a new goal. I want to go 250, 300, 350, 400. Forget about the 350. Let's just go right to 4, okay? And let's just call it a day.
So you said it was just you and the machine. So there's nobody in your ear sort of saying, hey, okay.
Nobody's in my ear but me and the God of Speed.
Wow.
See, I always say I have an angel on one side and I have the devil on the other side. The angel says, oh, Miss Valerie, you need to slow down. Oh, the devil says, go faster, Valerie.
Have you gotten speeding tickets? Are you someone who, when you're on the freeway, you want to speed? I mean, do you feel like you need to speed all the time?
No,
okay.
I don't, because, you know, I can, it's so, once you get that helmet on and you're in your body armor, you're in your leathers, you're in race mode,
yeah.
You're in go mode, and that's all you have. That's, you're just focused. As I was driving here, I was like, oh, don't be late, don't be late, don't be tardy. And so I said to myself, I got on the gas a little bit, and I said, boy, I feel like Danica Patrick.
Valerie Thompson is America's Queen of Speed, and she lives in the Valley. It's great to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
It's almost time for the next episode of The Quiz Show. That's when we bring back our resident quizmaster and Jeopardy! Tournament of Champions winner, Leszek Pavlovich. He'll face off against a KJZZ staff member in a game of trivia, but you can get in on the action too. Just solve this puzzle. Two candles are the same length. Both are lit at the same time. The first candle burns for 6 hours before it burns out. The second candle burns for 3 hours before it burns out. How much time does the first candle have to burn before it's twice the length of the second candle? When you have the answer, email us at theshow@kjzz.org. We'll randomly draw two names from the correct answers, and either Leszek or one of our KJZZ newsroom staffers will play on your behalf. If your player wins, you'll win a special KJZZ item. Still to come on the show, we shout it from the mountaintops, and to the delight of our listeners, I will not sing on the air. That and much more ahead. It's the show. Good Tuesday afternoon. This is the show on KJZZ. I'm Mark Brody along with Steve Goldstein. We are in the midst of our year-end member drive here at KJZZ. We hope you'll take just a couple of minutes and make your gift of support in support of KJZZ and everything you hear on this station. Three really easy ways: the KJZZ mobile app, kjzz.org, or 888-774-9150.
Whether it's the news of the day, what's going on in your community, arts and culture, restaurants. You will hear about all of those things on the show every Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday from 2 until 3. And this is your only opportunity during this very short end of year member drive to support the show and original productions specifically. So if you've been thinking about $10 a month might sound good, $20 a month might sound good as a sustaining member, now's the time to do it. Join folks like Chris in Phoenix, John in Phoenix, and go to kjzz.org to make that contribution.
And when you do so before 6 o'clock tonight, you'll be entered to win the iPad Pro and Apple Pencil. The Apple Pencil is like an accessory you can write on the iPad. It's kind of like a pen or an actual pen or a pencil.
So it's not like a number two pencil.
No, I don't think so. I don't think there's a little
eraser on
the top.
If you put it in a sharpener, probably not good.
Ooh, that would probably be bad for it. But you can draw on it. You can write on it. Helps you helps enhance your creativity, which obviously you have a lot of if you listen to this radio station. The iPad Pro is light, thin, and larger than other iPads. Let's be honest. It's something that you probably want and maybe something that you wouldn't buy for yourself. You can win it, but only if you call 888-774-9150 or go to kjzz.org.
You listen to KJZZ every day because you want to be informed. You want to have your life enriched. This is not background noise for you. So tell us how important it is to you. Do you listen 5 days a week? Do you listen 7 days a week? Do you keep KJZZ on over the weekend? Do you have it on various gadgets? Have you downloaded our free app? Do you have different radios in different parts of the house, like some people like myself, and you just sort of
some
go from
room, in this room.
Some from room to room. If that's how important this particular kind of radio is to you, we're asking you to make a contribution now. And whatever amount fits your budget, there's not some minimum you have to do. If you were thinking about, you know, again, $10 a month, maybe a one-time gift of $100, $200, whatever it is, the important thing about your individual contribution is it keeps the foundation of public radio in this community strong. So decide on an amount and say, yes, I'm going to make this year-end tax-deductible gift right now to KJZZ at 888-774-9150.
The show is such a unique product, both here on KJZZ and throughout the Valley. We are really digging into what's going on in neighborhoods across the Valley. We're in the Arcady neighborhood, in West Phoenix, in Sunny Slope, in South Phoenix. We are visiting all of these neighborhoods and talking to people who live there to find out what issues are going on, what is of import to you in your particular neighborhood, and then we're talking about it on the show. You're just not going to hear it anywhere else. We hope you put a dollar value on the listening to that and make a gift of support during the short end of the year drive. You can make your tax-deductible contribution at kjzz.org or by calling 888-774-9150.
And with original productions on KJZZ, just like you've come to rely on with NPR, you're hearing from experts, you're hearing people have civil discussion. Doesn't make you want to turn off the radio, makes you want to turn up the radio. That's what public radio is like. So endorse this kind of programming and make your contribution right now at 888-774-9150. This end-of-year member drive ends tomorrow. Please do your part at kjzz.org.
At a time when lots of media outlets are cutting back and reducing their staffs, KJZZ is investing in local coverage, in national coverage, in international coverage. You get all of it. You find out what's going on here in the Valley. You find out what's going on across the country and around the world. We rely on you to help make it happen. That's why we come to you during this short member drive. Started yesterday, ends tomorrow. That's it. You can make your tax-deductible contribution in about 2 minutes at kjzz.org or by calling 888-774-9150.
When you listen to the show, it's a true listening experience. You're actively involved in it. You're hearing about what's going on in your world, in your community. And we're trying to use the medium of radio and the human voices you hear, whether sounds of the city, that's another feature you often hear on the show. Interesting places, interesting people you're probably not hearing anyplace else. Endorse that right now with a gift of support at kjzz.org or 888-774-9150.
KJZZ is supported by Stinson Leonard Street. With nearly 500 attorneys providing transactional and litigation legal services from 14 offices across the country, online at stinsonleonard.com.
A pair of ASU professors is among those in Paris this month lending their expertise to the Global Climate Change Summit. KJZZ's Phil Lastman caught up with them to find out what they're doing there.
Dan Bedansky is an environmental law expert and professor at the school's Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law, and Dr. Sonia Klinsky is assistant professor at ASU's School of Sustainability. They join us now by Skype in the French capital. First of all, for Professor Bedansky, you've been discussing how to make these arguments stick under international law. And that would seem to be a pretty tall order considering the disparate countries involved and their conflicting interests.
It certainly is very difficult. It's not the case that international law is going to force countries to be able to do something, particularly on an issue like climate change, which affects fundamental economic and national interests. But what international law, I think, can do, and hopefully will do under the Paris Agreement, is to be able to facilitate what countries have an interest in doing and make it easier for them to cooperate.
If we can't agree on the cause or effects of climate change here in the U.S., how do we expect to sign on to this global agreement? How do you settle those arguments?
It's interesting that the arguments about climate change are probably most intense in the United States compared to other countries. The global science definitely tells us that climate change is happening. And more of the conversation is talking about how to deal with the effects of it. So instead of arguing about whether or not it exists, a lot of the conversation is already moving forward beyond that, saying, okay, how are we going to deal with some of the issues that we're seeing already start to happen? And the other element of this is a lot of the actions that countries are interested in taking are ones that make sense anyway.
For those of us in Arizona and the Southwest in general who might ask, well, how does this affect me, what goes on in Paris? What do you tell them?
Well, so climate change is going to be having impacts on a global basis and on a regional basis and a local basis. And states like Arizona, which are water-stressed, that have potential issues with drought, are ones that are going to face some of the biggest impacts from climate change. So Arizona can't solve the problem itself. Arizona contributes a small fraction of global emissions. It requires an international effort to reduce emissions, to reduce the impacts that are ultimately going to be felt in places like Arizona.
So the first comment that comes to mind actually echoes Dan quite strongly. The Southwest is actually quite vulnerable to some fairly serious climate impacts. So thinking about this in the long term actually is in our own best interest. The second area is that more and more we're seeing an emphasis on innovation and on green technologies. And Arizona is particularly well placed to be a leader on solar energy. So Arizona has an opportunity in this space as well as a potential threat. So I would really think it's probably in our best interest, both in the short and long term, to be taking this quite seriously.
So what will each of you bring home from these talks back to your students at ASU here in Tempe?
I think students are fascinated by the kind of international negotiations that are going on here, coming back and be able to give reports as to what happened, how it works, what are the potential pitfalls, how those can be overcome. I think having the kind of firsthand experience of seeing the negotiations really is a benefit to students in the teaching and in their own work.
Yeah, well, for me, it's incredibly important to be here, partly as a link back to our students. In addition, I'm doing things like Skyping into elementary schools Students are always really fascinated about these processes. They can feel so far away. But when we talk to the next generation, this really is about the kind of world that they're going to inherit. So the more information and the better understanding they can develop now of the global processes and efforts to come to an agreement on this, the better. So I'm really looking forward to coming back and doing a lot more education when I get back, and I'm doing a lot of education here.
Dan Badansky specializes in global affairs at the Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law at Arizona State University, and Sonia Klinsky is assistant professor at the School of Sustainability. Thank you both for joining us from the Climate Summit in Paris.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Yep, same goes.
That's KJZZ's Phil Latzman. ASU students have started their final exams. Their counterparts at U of A and NAU will start in the coming days. And with finals often come essays, and with essays, concerns about plagiarism. For more on how college campuses are affected by it and what they're doing to try to prevent it, we turn to Teddy Fishman, director of the International Center for Academic Integrity at Clemson University.
One thing that we are still seeing is we're still seeing quite a bit of what we call cut-and-paste plagiarism. And that leads us to believe that students don't necessarily understand exactly where the boundaries are regarding plagiarism. So that's one thing. But another thing, a trend that is quite troubling to us, is that we're also seeing an increase in the rise of bespoke papers or custom-made papers or papers for hire, where students are apparently attempting to avoid being caught plagiarizing. So instead of cutting and pasting, they're having someone else write an entire paper for them.
Is it just a matter of students trying to stay a step ahead of plagiarism detection programs?
It does seem like that. I mean, students, especially when the students are not motivated intrinsically or when they don't see the value of a course or of an assignment, the students often are trying to find the path of least resistance. And whereas in the past, cutting and pasting was often seen as the path of least resistance, now because of the increase in the use of plagiarism detection software, which, by the way, is really text matching software in almost all cases, but the use of that software has increased, and so now the path of least resistance is often just getting somebody else to do the whole thing for them.
Is the software sophisticated enough to catch students who are using different words to basically reflect the same ideas as somebody else?
That's a great question. And the answer is that the software is relatively sophisticated. So it can pick up if only a few words are changed. But one of the other things that we're seeing is that students are increasingly learning to kind of do a plagiarism check in the same way that you'd do a spell check and then alter enough of their text to avoid detection.
How does the rise of online courses play into this?
There are some features of online courses that make some aspects of detecting any kind of academic dishonesty a little bit more complicated, and one of them is that often in a class, especially a large online class, the teachers don't have as great a familiarity with their students. And really, that's one of the even with all the technology that's available, that's one of the ways that plagiarism is often detected, is if a teacher knows that a student is not likely to use particular vocabulary words, or if a teacher knows that this fact is very detailed and it's very technical and there's no reason to believe that the students knew that, that's one of the ways that we know to investigate a little bit further. And so the less familiarity the teachers have with the students, the less they are able to, pay attention to those things and kind of know that something might be wrong. And I have to say, though, that that's also true in great big lecture classes.
Yeah, is there a way around that? I mean, is there a way, especially on some of these online courses where students might not actually be face-to-face with a teacher much, if ever, is there a way to prevent that?
Well, there's no way that I know of to prevent it entirely, but there are lots of things that we can do to lessen the chances. One of the things that we recommend that is accessible to just about anyone is to do, instead of large-scale assessments, you know, where a great percentage of the points for the class rest on just one or two essays or exams, to instead do more frequent and more varied kinds of assessments. Another thing is to just raise the consciousness of the students about what it is they're doing and why it's important. So those are two things. And then another thing is to actually talk about the value of a degree and the extent to which it actually depends on the integrity of everybody in the academic community.
Teddy Fishman is the director of the International Center for Academic Integrity at Clemson University.
Arizona State University has more than 21,000 so-called digital immersion students. Those are students who are fully online. Bruce Matsunaga is director of digital technology for ASU's Department of English. He says the department uses current software to keep track of how students are using their research material and if it's being done properly.
As part of Blackboard, we have access to SafeAssign, which is a matching detection tool that's part of the Blackboard system. And Blackboard is widely used, so I imagine there are plenty of other colleges and universities that are using this same tool. I think the numbers from last year were something like 75% of all colleges and universities were using the Blackboard system. And the SafeAssign basically just checks a document for matches to databases, to the internet, and gives a percentage of matching report that the teacher can use. It'll show suspected sources side by side with the writing that the student turned in. If a submission has a high percentage of matching, we use it as an opportunity to discuss with the student what might have caused this. It could be that they actually don't really know how to paraphrase correctly, or perhaps they're citing sources but not actually citing them correctly.
Considering that Arizona State and other universities have this software and have things out there, would a student who does this not have been aware think maybe because he or she's really computer savvy, they can outsmart the system?
I'm not sure if that's the actual mindset of the students. Most of the cases that I've come across have just been a student who's running out of time and they don't know how to cite properly. I mean, this is usually the freshman year writing courses. It's an opportunity, though, to have them reflect on their own writing and develop it in ways that they hadn't thought of. I mean, one of the things in English, at least, just using a tool that is detecting matching isn't necessarily a penalty on the students or that we don't trust them, but it's an opportunity for them to see, oh, even in graduate classes, for instance, what SafeAssign can tell them is that if they are, let's say it comes back with a matching report of something like 60 or 70%, well, that's probably showing that even, and if they are citing their sources correctly, that they need to find a better balance between their writing, their original writing, and then citing secondary research.
Do you think there's a greater need to have programs like this now as students are more computer savvy, they have more access to information, even if they're not looking to cheat or plagiarize? It just seems like things are much more readily and more easily found than they used to be.
I'm not sure if that hasn't been happening ever, you know, I mean, previously, it might be them trying to paraphrase an encyclopedia entry on something, as opposed to now where they can just copy and paste it wholesale, I suppose. One thing that the tool does do is that it brings the issue of academic integrity, you know, sort of to the forefront in the student's mind and shows that the teacher is paying attention. So if they think they can get away with it, when they go and they see it, that they're depositing this into SafeAssign, it actually does give them a warning that, you know, by the way, this is going to be checked. So it's a bit of a deterrent as well, I suppose.
Bruce, you seem to have such a reasonable perspective on this. Did that come easily to you?
We teach a huge amount of freshmen, and we try to, you know, in our writing courses, try to set them on, you know, sort of the right course that we hope will ensure them for future success. And part of that is learning how to, you know, do the work in stages rather than waiting till the last minute. And that's why we emphasize the process so much.
Bruce Matsunaga is Director of Digital Technology for Arizona State University's Department of English. Bruce, thanks so much for the time.
Thanks for having me.
Don't go away. Still much more show to come. Much like you, many, many interests. The show brings you a wide variety of topics, including something coming up that sounds a little bit like what you're listening to now, but believe me when I tell you, you will want to stick around to hear this. More ahead, it's the show.
Good Tuesday afternoon with Steve Goldstein. I'm Mark Brody. During the KJZZ year-end member drive, we hope you'll take just a couple of minutes this Tuesday afternoon, show your support for KJZZ and everything that we offer, including, quite frankly, yodeling. There's yodeling coming, Steve.
You had to be quite frank about that.
Mark,
I've known you a long time. You're not. You know, you're pretty frank most of the time.
I guess that's
usually
kind of
not
you.
About your yodeling, though.
No, I take yodeling very, very seriously. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150. When you call, I guess you could yodel at the person who answers the phone if you want.
Yeah, I suppose so. And you can give yourself a chance to win an iPad Pro and Apple Pencil. That's an incentive for you in addition to supporting public radio. It's light, thin, larger than other iPads. It can expand your creativity because you can take this thing anywhere. Sit in the park. Do people still sit in the park?
I guess you can.
You can sit in the park and you can compose
sketch.
And sketch. Yeah, if you want to just look at your etchings or whatever the old phrase used to go. I mean, this is a great opportunity. So listening to public radio right now, obviously you're learning a lot, maybe not from us, but in other ways. So now's the time to say, yes, I want to support public radio, year-end tax-deductible contribution, and give myself a chance to win an iPad Pro with the Apple Pencil. Why not? 888-774-9150. You can also join us on the web. It's kjzz.org.
You're connected to our community, the country, and the world with KJZZ's latest news and programs like the show, taking you into the neighborhoods that make the Valley what it is. Please invest in the future of KJZZ to help keep it strong for years to come. Go to KJZZ.org or call 888-774-9150.
And when you become a sustaining member of KJZZ, that helps the program a lot, helps the station, it helps your own listening, this community of public radio listeners who've become members. You give the station that predictable source of income, and it can be at whatever amount fits your budget. Maybe it's $10 a month, perhaps it's up to $25 a month, perhaps even higher than that. That's totally up to you. But the key thing is that sustaining members are essential to keeping the news you listen to every day on the air. And again, you can choose how much to give. Maybe you want to become a Leadership Society member. That's about $100 a month. Give that a try if you can. If not, give it whatever level feels good. It's 888-774-9150.
Thank you to Barbara in Litchfield Park, Andrea in Mesa, who became a new sustaining member. We heard from Teresa in Cave Creek, David in Carefree, Natalie in Tempe. Some of your fellow listeners who have stepped forward to do their individual part. Also, they've stepped forward to enter to win the iPad Pro and Apple Pencil. Again, that drawing tonight at 6 o'clock. You want to get yourself entered to win that. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150.
This short drive will be over tomorrow night, so now is the time to support the stories you hear on KJZZ. You know, as a listener, this is a unique service. We've committed to bringing you the news of Phoenix and Arizona, as well as the national and international news, a combination you can only find here on 91.5. So please contribute what you can at 888-774-9150.
It takes just a couple of minutes, but that investment is so vital. You are the most important and reliable source of funding for the station. It's how public radio works. It's why we come to you during these short member drives to ask for your support. You can donate on the KJZZ mobile app at kjzz.org or by calling 888-774-9150. And thanks.
KJZZ is supported by Mayo Clinic, where medical experts work together across specialties to improve diagnosis and treatment for patients with the most complex conditions. More at mayoclinic.org.
The Valley is home to lots of different types of music, including a surprisingly Western style that may not come to mind right away. KJZZ's Sarah Ventry talks with a local who's also a champion yodeler.
My name's Paula Williamson. Actually, I sing under Paula Erlene. I've been yodeling since I was 2, my mama says. I want to be a
cowboy sweetheart. Paula Erlene has won 6 yodeling championships, but how is that even something that someone decides to do?
My daddy was a Baptist preacher, and so we lived very, very rural place in Arkansas, and we couldn't even get the radio. We were so far from anywhere. And so my mom had a huge record collection, and most of it was country music, so I learned to yodel with all those records.
Lots of people think of yodeling as an Alpine tradition, but some varieties are distinctly Western. And Arlene says you can hear the vocal techniques used in yodeling in some country music. Think Hank Williams Sr. when he makes his voice break. She's long gone and
now I'm lonesome blue. You're changing from your chest voice to your falsetto, and that's what yodeling is. Lo-dee-dee, oh, lo-dee-dee, oh, lo-dee-dee, oh.
That vocal similarity helps make it possible for Erleen to perform not only as a yodeler, but also as a country tribute artist. She worked for a while doing a show in Branson, Missouri called Hank and Patsy Revisited, singing the music of Patsy Cline. These days, Erleen performs mostly yodeling music, including a show with her husband, a bona fide John Wayne lookalike. Talk about a Western power couple. When it comes to a niche genre like yodeling, most people have a very limited understanding of what exactly it is. It's usually a pop culture reference. For some, a cartoon. For others...
High on a hill was a lonely goat herd, lay, od, lay, od, lay, ooh. Loud was the voice of the lonely goat herd, lay, od, lay, od, loo.
Most people say, oh, so you can do the Sound of Music. And I think, that's really not yodeling, because, yeah, they hit the right notes. So you can go, but it's not yodeling. She really just hit the notes. And so if I were yodeling, it's, you know, and you keep going back and forth.
As a champion yodeler, people have asked Erleen for lessons, but she says it's one of those things that's tough to teach.
I mean, I can tell you what to do, but it's kind of like swimming. I can tell you how to swim, but it doesn't mean you're going to be able to swim.
All the cowpokes hit the trail long before the dawn. With a little bit of yodeling, hello, dee. And old camp cookies got that coffee, bacon, and biscuits on. With a little bit of yodeling, hello, dee.
Honestly, it's a matter of just practicing until you get it, until it sounds right.
With a little bit of yodeling, hello-dee, all along the way. As the dawn creeps.
Erleen has a new album out called Across the Brazos, and she'll be performing throughout January at the Western Spirit Museum. Sarah Ventry, KJZZ, News.
With a little bit of yodeling, hello dee. There'll be hooping and a hollering, cutting and a clamoring to push that bird along. With a little bit of yodeling.
Good afternoon, happy Tuesday. It's the show on KJZZ. I'm Mark Brody with Steve Goldstein. Mercifully, neither of us will attempt that now or probably ever.
I feel like public radio fund drives are almost like trying to move the herd along as well. move that herd to the phone. Come on now.
888-774-9150, KJZZ.org. This is the year-end member drive. The last couple of minutes to give your support to KJZZ original production, The Show. Of course, Here and Now coming up tomorrow morning at 11, more voices from our community, a mosaic of showing you everything that our community is. KJZZ.org is one place you can show your support. The KJZZ mobile app is another. The third, the old-fashioned telephone, 888-774-9150.
And give yourself a chance to win the iPad Pro and Apple Pencil as well when you make your contribution to KJZZ before 6 o'clock. That's when the winner is going to be drawn. Again, you can give us a call, 888-774-9150. You can do what Gregory and Anita did in Paradise Valley. They went to KJZZ.org, as did Dale in Illinois. Dale, thank you for the long-distance shout-out.
888.
You're like Casey Kasem.
That was a little shout out. That was a little Casey Kasem-esque. I enjoyed it. 888-774-9150, KJZZ.org. The reality is, it feels good to give to something you value. KJZZ brings you accurate, credible news and great programs you've come to rely on whenever you need them. You help keep the service strong when you become a new member. It only takes a few minutes. Join today. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150, or the KJZZ mobile app.
Your contribution is so valuable. In fact, your contributions are the most important source of income that KJZZ has. Be a member today. Say you want to be a part of this community. You already sort of are as a listener. And think about how good that feels when you actually contribute to the listening you do and know that you're making it possible for the show to be on the air, making it possible for our reporters to be in the field, making it possible to hear programs like Morning Edition and All Things Considered. That feels so much better. 888-774-9150.
Thank you to John in Phoenix, Ray in Glendale, Chris in Phoenix, who became a sustaining member, Judy and Chris in Gilbert, new sustaining members.
fellow listeners who've stepped forward and said, yeah, this is important to me. We're going to give a financial contribution to make sure that KJZZ is there whenever we want to listen, to make sure that reporters can continue to come into our neighborhoods to find out what's going on, what issues are of importance to us, and also bring you national, international news. KJZZ.org, 888-774-9150.
This end-of-year member drive ends tomorrow night, and the way we're able to keep these drives so short is because of sustaining members. Monthly gifts to the foundation for the important news coverage you count on from KJZZ. So become a sustaining member today during this end-of-year member drive with an easy monthly gift that's automatically renewed until you decide to change it. So maybe that's $10 a month or $25 a month. Make sure to make that tax-deductible donation today online at KJZZ.org or 888-774-9150.
Your support really does make a difference. It's your support that brings you the quality programs you expect, like the show. It's your support that brings you the mobile app, that brings you reporters in the field, that brings you NPR News, that brings you all of the original productions you hear here. Join the growing KJZZ community. Make your tax-deductible contribution right now. It's easy. Just go to KJZZ.org. It takes a couple minutes when you call 888-774-9150.
And thanks to all the folks we've heard from on the web this hour, Mark. That includes Richard in Scottsdale, Stephen in Scottsdale, Arun in Mesa, and Tom and Stephanie heard from them in Altadena, California. Thanks very much to all of you for going to KJZZ.org and supporting KJZZ during this end-of-year member drive. This is member-supported KJZZ FM Phoenix and HD. Thanks so much for listening and for your support.
KJZZ is supported by Citizens Clean Elections Commission, helping to take the guesswork out of voting. You can pledge to vote informed for the 2016 elections on the issues that matter most to you. Details at facebook.com/azcleanelections.